Okay, so this will be something which obviously has to do with this program, but I would like to say that this is the work which, according to my standards, is not yet fully finished. Yet I think it is an interesting story, and that's why I decided to present it here. So it was, it is mostly done in collaboration with the student from Landau Institute, with Alexander Stick, the student from Landau Institute, student of mostly Misha Fegelman, and it has to do with again, with the difference between the fermions and bosons, but somehow motivation came from condensed matter, not from cold atom business, although perhaps it could be an interesting story for cold atoms as well. So, what is the story about? This story began 5 years ago or so, when people studied amorphous films of indium oxide and titanium nitride, and these films were interesting because there was a direct superconductor to insulated transition in these films, and so there was some systematic study, and at some point people found something which excited them and some of the community too much, and the finding was the following, that when the system is kept at low but not so low temperatures, like 70 millikelvin, then the IV characteristics, so it is essentially voltage and the conductance, it is a continuous function. So of course it is the films which are weak insulators, and so the conductance, differential conductance, is pretty low, like in insulators, but still it was some smooth function of the voltage, so at very low voltage it was a linear regime, and then of course it is a non-linear regime, but somehow it is an expected behavior where you increase the voltage, so your conductance increases as well. But then, what was found, that if temperature is lowered as much as 20 millikelvins, for instance, for this film, what one can see is the following, that it in some region of the voltages, they could not detect any conductance at all. People say that it is like a wood. And then there is a threshold, and beyond this threshold, there is a jump by many orders of magnitude of the conductance, and then there is more or less the same behavior as it was for higher temperatures. So one could say that this is, you know, something very peculiar for the this particular system, but it appears that it is not. I mean, there are other systems like, and in fact, it was first observed in the indium oxide films. What one can say about these films is the following, what is important. First of all, they are three-dimensional, essentially, because their thickness is about 1,000 angstroms. Secondly, they are very disordered. So they are so disordered that they exhibit the insulator behavior. Although this insulator behavior in the equilibrium is not quite typical because it exhibits Arrhenius law of conductance and not the Efrost-Shklovsky or Mott law. But the most exciting was the following, that there is some temperature below which there is a jump, and then one cannot see any conductance. And then there was a speculation about super insulator and things like that.
Can I ask? So that sigma equals zero, that's roughly temperature independent below the
temperature? Well, I will show now, next slide.
The other question is there a...
No, here there is simply, they could not detect anything. It was beyond the possibility to detect.
I see.
And now...
Wait, one more question.
And this is what you see now here. So, and then there was more recent work of 2009 of the group of Ben Shahar, and what they essentially observed, this is IV characteristics, so it is not conductance versus voltage, but current versus voltage. And what they found is that, first of all, there is no any zero conductance, because at very small voltages they could detect some signal, and this means that the conductance isn't zero. In general, they confirmed the picture that was before, meaning that there is a jump below a certain temperature, there is a jump by many orders of magnitude. So, different colors correspond to different fridge temperatures. So when the fridge temperature is high, then there is a smooth curve, so no jumps. And then there is some temperature, some critical temperature, such that if you go below this critical temperature, you see the jump. So, and the jump becomes bigger and bigger as you go to lower temperature. So then some people started to talk about phase transition, but we all know that in order to talk about phase transition, one has to do measurement in equilibrium. But this was a non-linear conductance, so you put system at a finite voltage, and this jump occurred at some voltage which was quite high, and so it is about 200 millivolts, something like that. And so, of course, one cannot speak about equilibrium, and one first should look at this phenomenon as a non-equilibrium one. And so what we suggested almost immediately after this new series of work was that it is essentially the very well-known old phenomenon, that there is no new phase, but there is a new state. And new state means the following, that if your electronic system, which is heated by the finite voltage, if the temperature of the electronic system can be largely decoupled from the phonon bus, then one can face the situation where there is a bistability. So at one single voltage you may have the cool state and the hot state of electronic systems, and they obviously will have different conductance and different currents, so that the hot will have bigger current and the cold will have a smaller current. And what it is, nothing new by stability is very well known. So what we suggested is that the electronic temperature should be found from the heat balance. So there is a Joule heat, and there is a cooling, which is mostly eventually due to phonons. And so we did the simplest assumption. The assumption was that conductance or resistance of the system is described by the same function of temperature as in equilibrium, but this will be not an equilibrium fridge temperature, but the temperature of the electronic system. So we introduced, instead of one temperature, we introduced the minimum amount of temperatures to have non-equilibrium. between two temperatures, one being the temperature of electronic system and the other being the temperature of the phonon bus. And then so there is a Joule heat and there is a phonon cooling which consists of the out and in terms. In the simplest assumption, they are simply additive. And so what we one can solve this equation numerically or even analytically, and what one get is the following. So this is the electronic temperature, and this is the combination which follows from the heat balance equation, and this is voltage, and this is the combination of resistance which depends on the electronic temperature and the cooling due to phonons. And so if one plots such such function, then at a certain voltage one can find the corresponding electronic temperature. So it is if I take, for instance, this voltage, there will be electronic temperature like that. If I take this voltage, it will be like here. But then there is some region of bistability such that if I take the voltage in this region, I can find two stable points and one unstable point as usual. And this happens essentially in order to have such behavior of this function. What one has to have, one has to have a very steep temperature dependence of resistance and rather smooth temperature dependence of the cooling. So this curve was actually plotted having this choice, and the whole talk will be mostly about this. Why in the why resistance is like in the insulator, so it has at low temperatures an Arrhenius behavior here, but could be also not necessarily Arrhenius, but some combination of Frostowski behavior. Important is that it is exponential, and the cooling is power law. So why cooling is power law in the insulator? It is one of the questions which I will raise. So if you take two exponential behaviors, normally you will not get such such a bistability. So you you need one steep and one slow dependence.
What are the units on this TE?
Sorry?
On this x-axis, what are the units?
The x-axis is electronic temperature.
Yeah, but the units on it? Those are dimensionless numbers.
I mean, here it was just some concrete plot for the T naught here about 2 degrees, and this is in Kelvin.
Okay.
So.
Okay, and so should I? The electrons here are always warmer than the phonons, or.
The electron?
How does it compare to the phonon temperature?
No, the phonon temperature was, as I said, it was something like 50 millikelvin,
okay.
And this was 200 millikelvin. So it is about factor of 2 or 4 of overheating.
To establish a temperature for the electrons, you need some scattering mechanism.
Of course, there is interaction which is assumed.
It's inter-electrons?
Interacting electrons, yes.
But that's too weak to re-establish.
No, it is not. No, it is not, because no, one can estimate the time of establishing the equilibrium at those temperatures. It is not so. It is 10^-9, something like this. So it is not. Electron scattering is quite efficient. So in contrast to phonon scattering is really very weak at such temperatures. But electron scattering is enough. Okay, so then this is what we produce. We produce such a plot without actually knowing the experiment, because the experiment came later. And what was what is this plot about? This is the temperature of the phonon bus, and this is the electronic temperature, and this is the bistability region. So as you start from very small voltage, your temperature, of course, electronic temperature is in equilibrium, and it is equal to the phonon temperature, and then you increase your voltage, so you heat up the system, and if the system, if the phonon temperature is high enough, so it is higher than something, then you increase, you start from here, you increase the temperature of electronic system, and nothing happens, so it is simply smoothly increasing. But if you go to lower phonon temperature, so you start from here and increase the voltage, then the electronic system will be heated for a while, and then it will jump to the other state, because this is a bistable, unstable region, and then it will be heated smoothly again. So, what if you look at this curve? So the smoking gun, to me, the smoking gun evidence that this interpretation is correct is the following. You see that the curve has a triangular form. So it is like this. So if you go from cool state to the hot state, so if you increase the voltage, then actually the temperature at which instability happens, or the voltage at which instability happens, it of course depends. It follows roughly the phonon temperature, and there is a little of overheating, and then there is instability. But if you look at the electronic temperature of the hot state, so if you go from here, you will see that it is pretty much constant, and then it terminates at some point. Instability terminates, and so this is some feature of the heat balance equation, if you wish, and this is a feature of the following. This is the feature is eventually has to do with the following: that when electrons are very much overheated, so for them it is irrelevant what happens, that there is a phonon temperature which is not zero. But at the same time, when you have a cool phase, it is very close to the phonon temperature, and so it should follow it somehow, and therefore there is this asymmetry. So when people did experiment plotted the same thing, so they found this very feature. So to me, it is the main evidence that everything is correct, and this is the experimental plot. So this feature of asymmetry, it is seen here, because if you increase the voltage, so you go from the cool phase to the hot phase, so you see that at this temperature jump happens here, at the lower temperature jump happens there, and at yet lower temperature it happens further on. So this is associated with this part of the of the curve. But when you go other way around, when you decrease the voltage, so it is not the sign of the voltage, it is simply the direction. When you decrease the voltage, you see that jumps, all the jumps collapse, so they happen almost at the same voltage. That has to do with this almost flat part here, and in our simulations, I repeat again that we did it without knowledge of that. So to me, it was the main evidence of correctness. Okay, so more or less.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
Back there.
How do you measure the electronic temperature?
Okay, so this is, I expected this. It is measured. in the following way. Of course, it is not, absolutely unambiguous. What you do, you do the following. You first do measurements of conductance versus temperature in the linear regime. So you measure your conductance, how it depends on the temperature in the linear regime. And then you use this curve as a thermometer. Okay. So what we saw is that the electronic temperature, according to this interpretation, it may be different from the temperature of the bus by a factor of two or even more, and so it is largely decoupled. Now, the standard theory of this Hopping conductivity, the picture is when there is a phonon bus, and so electrons pick up some energy from the phonon bus and then jump. And there were a lot of simulations of this model, and simulations, of course, have shown that there is an overheating, but this overheating was never enough to produce bistability. So the electronic system in the simulations was a bit higher than the phonon temperature. Electronic temperature was a bit higher than the phonon temperature, but never as high as factor of two or so. And that's why what the nonlinear effect due to overheating was observed, but it was never like bistability. So why in these systems it so happens, and in many other systems it doesn't happen, this is one of the questions. And hint is that those systems were studied just because this was the system, the rare system for which the direct insulated to superconducting transition was observed, and all these measurements were done very close to this transition. So anyway, this, according to this interpretation, this is an example of the system where the phonon and electron system can be largely decoupled, and this means that Hopping still happens, and this means that the electronic system, interacting electronic system, can act like a bus for itself, and this was one of the.
Can I ask, actually, can you go back to the experimental plot?
Yeah.
I just want to ask a very pedantic question. So if I look at this, if the measurements are done very slowly, then the symmetry of current and the symmetry of electric field have to be identical.
You mean that...
The fact that this is asymmetric means that this is a non-equilibrium effect?
No. Why should it be identical?
J and E have the same symmetry.
No. The point is that that this this curve follows from eventually is controlled by the heat balance equation, because the resistance of the electronic system is a function of the electronic temperature, and the electronic temperature is something that you find from the heat balance, and it is the heat balance that makes this asymmetry. It is not, it doesn't have anything to do with the speed you do the experiment. It is not the speed was actually very, very slow. It was like they did one experiment during many hours. So this is the solution. If you take and you do the solution of the heat balance equation, you will find this asymmetry immediately. But it doesn't have anything to do with this is a steady state. So you find the steady state.
In some mean field approximation, yes. But I think these hysteresis loops have to shrink when you do things.
No. In fact, there are some details here, and the details are the following. If you zoom any of this jump, you will see that the big jump consists, in fact, of the smaller ones. And this is something which has to do with the inhomogeneity of proliferation of the hot phase and all these type of the things, some dendrites of temperature. So this is all there. But amazingly enough, the picture which is which disregards all that, and the picture which only takes into account homogeneous heat balance equation, it describes all the principal features of that. But of course, details not, because if you look at the here it is not seen, but there are some smaller steps with some statistics, and so there is some mesoscopic.
In equilibrium, we usually use free energy to choose which of the two solutions is better. So do you have any sense of, out of these two solutions, which is more stable? So how do you...
What is plotted there, it was... The question you ask is legitimate. But this is the question about the following. This is the question about which solution, this one or that one, is more stable. This is your question. But what was plotted there was the following. It was it was the absolute limit of stability. So what actually happens is the following, that the system follows here to here to here, and when it can find another solution, it immediately jumps. So it jumps not where the Maxwell rule or something like that happens, but it jumps almost immediately when it finds another solution. And also from this side too. So it goes, and then it jumps to here. So what we calculated, we did not do this thermodynamic consideration and all this type of the things, because it is not equilibrium, it is steady state. We simply plotted the absolute limit of stability. And it appears that this absolute limit of stability was essentially what they have observed. So they could not go further on to here, they jump immediately. Now, okay, so...
Sorry, I didn't understand. I mean, if you repeat your argument, once you have jumped, the system should jump again. I mean, I don't understand. If you come this way, jumps, and then you follow this way. If you come this way, it jumps, but then it's in a region in which it should have jumped already on the other side. So I don't understand, I mean, how it works.
No, once again. What I'm saying is that it looks like the experiment shows the following, that you increase the voltage, and so you go along this line. Now, as you reach this point, there is a stable solution here appearing, and immediately here some instability happens, and it is coming to here, and then it follows this path. Now, when it goes from this side, it jumps immediately here, and then follows this path, which is inside this this strip. So what happens is the following: that it jumps from here to here when it has such an opportunity, but then it goes to along the path which is in the bistable region. This is what you ask, right?
Yeah, I don't understand why when you come this way, it jumps immediately as it loses. Stability, and instead when you come this way, it can be in this I don't know, intermediate line without jumping. So
look,
for example, if you go up
Look, for some reason, jump up and down is not equivalent. So when in the cool phase, where they have some embryo of the hot, not phase, but in the cool state, so suppose they have some embryo of the hot state because of the inhomogeneity. Now it proliferates immediately. And it goes to the hot state, and then it moves inside the region of bistability without jumping back, because somehow this hot phase, as it set up, it is more stable than the cold state from which it appears. So this is something that seems following from the experiment. So, because this is kinetic, after all, it is kinetic. It is not. You can understand that the hot phase inside the cold one can proliferate very quickly, but the cold state inside the hot one perhaps is collapsing because of the hot temperature around it.
One more comment, not even a question.
Yeah.
So the two phases actually differ by the amount of current flowing.
There cannot be
pockets because charge is conserved. You cannot have a pocket where current just flows more than everywhere else. So these must be some kind of filaments.
Yeah, filaments should be there.
No, only filaments. You cannot have pockets. Is that because there's different amount of current?
Okay, look, what I'm going to say. Look, let me continue. Otherwise, I will not reach the main subject. This was the whole stuff, which was sort of introduction.
Fine.
There are a lot of interesting questions related to that, and so I actually invite all of you to speak about that. But actually, I wanted to do something else. You see, what was also possible to find from this experiment, if you believe in this interpretation, what you can find is the cooling rate. The cooling rate is a subject of calorimetry, which is a very careful stuff, not very, there is a whole set of technology there. But here we deal with something actually more drastic, because here we deal with the catastrophe. The catastrophe allows to measure the cooling rate more accurately than in many other cases where there is only small overheating. So it was done. In this very experiment, if you again believe in this interpretation, you can do the following. You can extract the cooling rate as a function of the electronic temperature, and for different phonon temperatures. And what you see, for each phonon temperatures, you can only have some two pieces, because in between there is an instability. So you have a cold phase and you have a hot phase. So for different temperature, you have other pieces, and then what you do, you plot all of them on the same plot, and then you see that for different phonon temperatures, you have all pieces with gaps, all of them lying on the same line. And this line corresponds to the power law of the heating rate, with a power very close to 6. So, yeah, this was, it was surprising and not surprising simultaneously, because if you don't think about localization, if you don't think that this is the insulator, then you say, well, if you take the theory of cooling by phonons, electron cooling by phonons, you can get T to 6. So you are happy you got not T to 2, not T to 10, but you got T to 6. But then, if you think a little more, you start to worry why in an insulator, why the cooling has the same temperature dependence as in a dirty metal without localization effect. So this T to 6 one can get in a dirty metal without localization effect. But then one can measure the pre-factor here and compare it with this theory of dirty metal. And the conclusion is that the pre-factor is 2 to 4 orders of magnitude larger than it should be for the theory of the dirty metal, which gives T6. So why such an uncertainty? Because there is a sound velocity here, and sound velocity is not something that I can get with an accuracy better than a factor of 2, because it is a substrate and all these type of things, and it is in the fifth power, so this is where the uncertainty is from. So you see, it is a good news that it is T6, but it is too good news in some sense, because it is insulator, and also the prefactor shows that you are not really, that things are more complicated.
So, and the cooling rate is independent of the phonon temperature?
No, this is only part of the cooling rate. As I said, the cooling rate consists of the part of heat which flows from electron to phonon and the back. And under very general assumptions, this is a sum of two pieces. So I considered only one of them, out cooling rate. Now, so the first question that I ask, and this is my current answer, is the following: why power law cooling rate in the insulator? And the answer generally is the following: is that in order for current to, for electric current to flow, you have to move in the space. In order to have heating, you don't have to move in. Yeah. No, it is 45 minutes?
Yes.
Wow. I thought 1 hour. Okay, so. Okay, so the obvious thing is that you don't have to move in the space, and therefore localization is not so dangerous for you. So what you have to do, you have to do the following. Of course, you can only move in the energy space, and for each side, you have a number of localized states which are localized nearby, so that the site is inside the localization wall. And normally, the energy states of this localized state, not all of them, but those which are localized near the given point, separated by some energy distance which is proportional to 1 over localization volume. And this is supposed to be much bigger than the temperature. Otherwise, we would not have exponential behavior of resistance and conductance. On the other hand, the heating is only possible from partially filled states to partially filled states, because if it is empty, there is nothing to nothing to go from. And if it is totally filled, there is nothing to go in. And so what one has to do, one has to have two levels anomalously close to Fermi energy in the strip of the temperature. And this, of course, happens with small probability, which is like this. So this is something that, of course, it is the probability is small only as a power law, and so I can have a power law cooling because of that. But it is still smaller than in the metal. So one has to understand how to compensate this small factor, even if you believe that there is a power law cooling. And the only idea that comes to mind is actually that this is the system, which is quite special because nearby there is a superconducting to insulated transition. So there are superconducting, there are virtual pairs and superconducting fluctuations around. And so this was all the introduction. I thought that I have still 20 minutes. So what we did with these people now, we revisited the problem of electron cooling in the presence of superconducting fluctuation. So we introduced the Cooper attraction, but suppose that we are not in the superconducting phase, and we wanted to understand how these fluctuations can change the cooling rate. And in fact, let me give you the naive idea, and then believe me, it was to some extent technically confirmed by diagrammatic analysis. So I have a lot of diagrams here to show with some good, not just diagrams, but some conservations, non-conservations, and so on. There is a lot of interesting story here. But okay, what I can say is only the naive idea. Naive idea is the following, that the cooling rate is in fact proportional to the phonon time, and then it is proportional to the typical energy which is transferred in one act of moving in the energy space. And actually this energy for fermions, it is proportional to T squared, not to T. And the reason is the following, that this it is an integral energy, the energy, and the difference between the Fermi distribution with some electronic temperature minus the step function. And so, since it is energy, the energy, you have T squared. Now, if you go to bosons, suppose you produce pairs and they are just coupled, not Cooper pairs, but just bosons. In this case, the transferred energy is just proportional to temperature itself. And so the idea is that that you gain by transferring from T squared by E Fermi to T. And essentially it is to say that in the bosonic system the chemical potential is of the order of the temperature, and then this is a big gain. So as naive as it might be, it is still confirmed by some calculations. So what actually this picture gives, it gives the following. So suppose I consider the simplest case where the phonon temperature is, the phonon time is T cubed by D by temperature squared, that it is just conventional phonon time, and for electrons, you multiplied it by the transferred energy, which is T squared by epsilon Fermi, and what you end up is T5 behavior. And this is the most frequently found T5 behavior in the methods. Now, if I accept this idea of what happens when you do pairs, so instead of T squared by epsilon Fermi, I should put T. And so I will jump from T5 to T4. In the metal. But if I'm in the insulator, then I have to take into account this discretization of the spectrum, which gives small probability, which is T squared by delta xi squared, and then from T4 I come to T6. But this T6 will be with the prefactor which contains this spacing between localized energy levels, and this spacing is delta xi is proportional to the localized volume. So this means that this gamma will be proportional to xi to 6. And so if I'm close to the localization transition on the insulating side, then I have G6 but enhanced by Xi6, and Xi6 is a bit factor. So basically this is the main idea, and then I have to finish then all these diagrams and so on. There is only one point which I want to stress. So all this picture is more or less confirmed. So as far as the power is concerned, so we really jumped from T6 to T4 in the metal, but when we are in the localized phase, so we have additional T squared. But all that happens only if I am, so to say, in the Gross-Pitayevsky case. So if in all this business of fluctuational superconductivity, there is so-called fluctuational propagator, and this is nothing but the propagator of the Ginzburg-Landau theory. And so, in fact, if it is a conventional Ginzburg-Landau, it looks like this. So there is a sign minus here, and this is the dissipative dynamics. If I am in the other limit of formed bosons, I have I here, I have Gross-Pitayevsky. And this makes a difference. It makes a difference not only because of I and minus. It makes a difference because minus cannot go by itself. It can only go with some sign function, because this is this should be even function of here, and this is the rule. And so essentially what happens is that all these corrections due to fluctuational superconductivity, they are not correction. This is first thing. They could be large. Second thing is that they are only non-zero when in this dynamics we have a part which corresponds to Gross-Pitayevsky, and not only the part which corresponds to BCS. So if I am strictly in the BCS with electron hole symmetry, there is no effect. But if I violate somehow electron hole symmetry, or I produce the real pairs, then the imaginary part of the coefficient appears, and then there is an effect which essentially leads to the same temperature dependence as this naive consideration that I wanted to tell you about. So this is basically all, and this is how the cooling crate behaves near the metal insulator transition. So on the insulating side, as I said, it is T6 but enhanced by Xi to 6. Then on the metal side, it is in the critical region, it is constant. Then it starts to decrease because of the increasing elastic scattering length. And then finally, this correction due to pairing becomes small, and then there is the answer without interaction, and then eventually there is a clean limit where it is T5. So something like that. Sorry for not enough time to discuss all the details, and thank you for attention.
Maybe we have time for just one question. You can continue the discussion. Yes.
Am I right that with non-dissipative
Gross-Pitayevsky line dynamics is because of your playing with localized volume where you do not have continuous density of state.
No, I tell you what was really calculated. So it was in my talk there was a lot of interpretation, right? But one has to always distinguish between interpretation and the calculation. The calculation was the following: you take the usual fluctuation of superconductivity, right? And you write all the diagram which should be written. Now, then you see that without interaction, there was a certain cancellation, which was very important, and it was discussed many times. Now, what was all the hope for us is to break this cancellation by interaction. And that, in fact, if you take into account these diagrams with fluctuational superconductivity, you see the following, that these diagrams make contribution only if you have an imaginary part of the coefficient, because if you violate omega to minus omega, if there is no symmetry in the propagator with respect to omega and minus omega. This is the same as for the fluctuational Hall effect. Now, but this symmetry is violated by if you start from the system in which there is no particle hole symmetry. For instance, you take into account the derivative of the density of states. But of course, if you take into account the derivative of the density of states, the effect will be there, but it will be small. The maximum size of the effect happens when you have really the Gross-Pitayevsky. So when you have a preformed pairs. So because in this point the imaginary part of the coefficient becomes the biggest possible. So this is more or less what was calculated.
Okay, so just to continue discussions.